Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this webinar and podcast. And what I'm going to talk about today in this Motherwise Masterclass is specifically, what can you expect and what is kind of normal once you get beyond 40 weeks gestation in your pregnancy? It is absolutely normal that when you get to that 40-week gestation date, which is an approximation date of your 40-week gestation, and it's sometimes called estimated due date, but it's not a due date, it's grossly estimated amount of around that time, really. And remember that anywhere from 37 to 42 weeks is completely normal to give birth to a term healthy, normal baby. But certainly there's kind of this mindset change that does occur when we get as women beyond that quote unquote due date. And women start saying things like, oh, my baby's overdue. Yeah, well, your baby is not actually overdue until you're beyond 42 weeks. But we certainly start to feel that way. And I just want to remind you that that is really normal and really okay. Very, very, very few women get to the point of being 40 weeks and they're not feeling fed up of the pregnancy and they're not feeling really ready to meet their baby. But that's a wonderful thing because it means that when your contractions start, you're welcoming this onslaught of regular painful contractions. You want it because you're so fed up with the pregnancy. So I really do feel that it's a very healthy part of how you should be feeling to embrace that labor for the fact that you are over the pregnancy. So basically, sort of anywhere between, in general terms, look, every hospital, every obstetrician, every country, every region, they can all have different opinions on this. But there is some very good evidence on sound general practices should take place with regards to post-date. When we are talking about a healthy, normal woman with a healthy, normal baby, and what is the best way to manage going beyond 40 to 42 weeks, or 43 weeks for that point. So what I will do is give you a real overview. Look, this is not black and white, but if your obstetrician is saying something very different from what I'm about to say, then feel free to perhaps question it and find out why their idea. And you know, if you're part of this group anyway, you can always come on to our live weekly webinars and, you know, message me regardless of what topic we're talking about, and you can say, hey, you know, this is what's been said, what do you think about that idea? And of course, if you're part of my private program, well, we will be discussing that if you have one-on-one consults with me. Generally speaking, nothing particularly happens between 40 and 41 weeks. That's just a, you know, really common time for women to go into labor, so we're not going to do anything about it. But certainly at about 41 weeks, it's not a silly idea at all to be doing a post-date ultrasound scan, a sonography scan at that point. Because there's a few little check things that they'd like to do, and there's what they call a BPP, a biophysical profile, and there's like a little checklist that they're going to check through. But particularly looking at what is the placental blood flow like at that stage, because placentas do have expiry dates. So they'll do something called Dopplers usually, where they can actually see what blood flow is looking healthy and normal. They'll do things like measure the amount of water around the baby, making sure that the baby is getting well nutriented from that placenta. Because at this stage, you're 40 weeks pregnant with your baby, like virtually all the liquid that's in your tummy, the amniotic fluid, is actually pretty much baby wee at this stage. So long as your baby is weeing a lovely, normal, healthy amount, then your baby is, you know, receiving good nutrients. But if that liquor volume, as they call it, or liqua volume, which is the water, if that starts to get reduced, then we can go, maybe the placenta is starting to wilt a little bit. And obviously we want to know, which we've talked about before, that the baby is moving well, good fetal movements. So yeah, so having a scan at 41 weeks, yeah, kind of good idea, really, just to make sure everything's looking kind of tickety-boo. Then typically maybe at 41, a few days later, say 41 weeks and 3 days, then you might have a CTG. So that's where they put the belts around your tummy and do a little printout of the baby's heart rate for sort of 20, 30, 40 minutes and just make sure that everything looks good, no decelerations, good accelerations, good baseline variability. So there's a whole little checklist again that they're checking, looking at there, send you on your merry way. And then maybe a couple of days later, 41 weeks and 5 days, something like that, do another CTG, make sure everything looks good. And that would usually be at around the time that you would have a conversation with regards to potentially being booked in to have a post-dates induction. But maybe would occur at 41 weeks and 6 days, 42 weeks. But it is absolutely, I was going to say absolutely not okay, but let me just rephrase this. There is strong scientific evidence which would show that it is not best practice to be inducing a woman under 42 weeks, or particularly under 41 weeks, when the only reason for the induction is post-dates. We have a healthy, normal woman having healthy, normal pregnancy with a healthy, normal baby on board. And you start to interfere with that, the chances of the induction adding in complications is significant. So it significantly increases chances of instrumental deliveries, cesarean deliveries, traumatic births, emergency births, lower Apgar scores, higher hemorrhaging rates in the woman, like everything. It's hideous. So not a good idea to be tempted, in my opinion, and you know, I'm not God here, but in my opinion, it is not a good idea ever to be tempted to do an induction purely because you're sick and tired of being pregnant. You just could be opening up a whole other hornet's nest of problems that can have lifelong consequences. So yeah. Anyway, so what are the things that you can be doing? Well, we know that sex is good because man's sperm has prostaglandin, so that's helpful to ripen a cervix. And woman having an orgasm is great because that is a cervical movement, so that's good. And stretch and sweep. Now, if you are a first-time mother-to-be and you have healthy, normal pregnancy, healthy, normal you, healthy, normal baby, it's really borderline as to whether it's a good idea to be doing stretch and sweeps on your cervix between 40 and 41 weeks. Now, a stretch and sweep is an internal invasive procedure, but it's not that invasive. It's not involving a speculum. And to me, as a woman, I think speculums are more invasive. Basically, it's the midwife or the obstetrician just putting their fingers into your vagina and stretching your cervix open, just giving it a stretch, and then also sweeping the membranes around and separating them from around your cervix. Now, doing those two things sends a heap load of prostaglandins into that area and helps to ripen. And it's just, if you've got a really, really, really ripe cervix, that might be all it takes to actually put you into labor. Or if your cervix is not that ripe, it can really help to ripen a cervix. So I would have to say I tend to sit in the side of being pro stretch and sweeps when if the option is not doing a stretch and sweep and then ending up with a post-dates induction of labor with oxytocin drip. I think it is oftentimes can be better to do that stretch and sweep to help that woman go into strong labor naturally to avoid an induction. But obviously, you know, it requires consent on the part of the woman. How long does it take? Oh gosh, you know, a minute doesn't really take very long at all, especially with a skilled midwife, which most of them are. It's one of the things we get very good at is knowing about cervixes. Our whole lives run on cervixes, especially when you're 24/7 on call. But as I say, with a first time pregnancy, doing a stretch and sweep between 40 and 41 weeks is a little borderline, meaning sometimes what it can do is just send that woman into just days and days of niggle contractions that are not really progressing. I do think that beyond 41 weeks, heck yeah, bring it on. You want it. Like, you want to go into spontaneous labor at that point, right? You don't want an induction. You want to go into labor naturally. It's so much better for you and for baby. So yeah, I would say, you know, bring it on. Stretch your sweep every day, every second day. That's what I've, you know, when I've been overdue myself many moons ago. Yeah, bring it on. Do it. Make it happen. It can make a big difference. But again, it's a really personal decision. There's no rights or wrongs on this. So what happens if you do need to have an induction? So how does that sort of work? Well, there's a basic sort of process to it. So let's just say, and again, it does depend on different countries, different hospitals, different protocols, but in a really general term, the first thing that they want to do in the hospital to induce you into labor is to break your waters. But if your cervix is not ripe enough or open enough for them to break your waters or rupture your amniotic sac, if they can't do that, then, which often they can't, especially with labors with inductions under 40 weeks. So then what they do is put some prostaglandin in that area. Sometimes it's gel. There's different places use different things, but in general terms, they'll sort of tend to put some prostaglandin at the top of your vagina, right by your cervix, specifically to help your cervix ripen. And they will periodically check several times a day, like maybe two or three times a day, recheck, is your cervix riper? Can we break your waters yet? So that's what they're trying to do. So often when women go in for labor, in for inductions, they sort of think they're going to have the baby that day. Well, no, not if their cervix isn't ready, not at all. And it can take 2-3 days sometimes to get a cervix ready to have the waters broken, just like it does in normal life when you have a latent labor, getting your cervix riper and ready to dilatate. So it's no different. Now, some places around the world, they just go straight into using an oxytocin an oxytocin drip, which can be called a Synto drip or a Pitocinon, I think that's how they say it in America, drip. So different places call it different things, but it's basically oxytocin. But in most places, to my knowledge, the preference is for the waters to be ruptured first before starting an oxytocin drip. And the reason is to give a better chance that that oxytocin drip, if it is required, will actually work, because there's been the added benefit to that cervix of the waters being ruptured, but also because the rupturing of the waters themselves might be all it takes for that woman to go into labor herself without needing an oxytocin drip. So as I say, stage one of an induction is they want to break your waters or rupture your amniotic sac. So if that can be done immediately, your cervix is already a little bit open, especially that can be quite common with women having second or subsequent babies. Their cervix can often be already open ages, weeks sometimes, before they actually go into labor. And if the cervix is not fully open, then there's some prostaglandins put near it to soften and ripen it until it does start to open. Now, at this, the prostaglandins themselves may start some contractions, and those contractions could be light latent contractions, or they could actually go into fierce strong contractions of active labor. The contractions themselves might be all you need to be in labor. The contractions themselves might actually have you spontaneously, naturally rupture your own waters without having them need to be done by a doctor or midwife. So there's lots and lots of variation that can occur. So the prostaglandin may put you into labor, the rupturing of the membranes naturally or artificially may put you into labor, or you could try the whole kit and caboodle and it doesn't put you into labor. Or you might just be in latent labor, not full strong active labor, which we've talked about before is when you're having 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes, all over a minute long that you can't talk through. So 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes, all over a minute long that you can't talk through. That is the beginning of active labor. Everything before that is latent labor, generally. Okay, so at some point, either naturally, at some point, a decision is going to be made as to whether you need an oxytocin drip. If you are having strong active labor yourself, there's no point putting a drip up, and that would be very poorly not indicated. That would be a dangerous thing to do if somebody's already having strong active labor, to give you more oxytocin. No, not at all. If you are having some light contractions, then starting an oxytocin drip, that might be all it takes, just a little hint, what we would call a little tickle of Cinto, a little tickle of it might be all it takes to just really get your body going. And so that would mean that your body is doing most of the work, which is fantastic if that's how it occurs. Or maybe everything's been done and there's not a lot going on, and the oxytocin drip through your arm is going to be what is doing, practically creating all of your contractions. And every time, now when that is occurring, it can be quite tricky to get the exact right balance of oxytocin level going through your veins to hit those receptors in your womb. And it's kind of just not uncommon that, you know, we turn the Cinto up and we're getting too many contractions. 5 contractions in every 10 minutes, all over to 90 seconds long. Well, a baby's not going to sustain that one for a long time. No, we have to dial it down. So then we dial it down. Ah, look, now we're just getting 2 contractions every 10 minutes and they're 40 seconds long. So it is hard to replicate what a body does so beautifully with oxytocin levels naturally. So when we're doing it artificially, it can be problematic of turning it up, turning it down, turning up, turning down. And the oxytocin, from when it first starts at the beginning, is just going to get turned up and 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 up until you are doing that 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes all over a minute long that you can't talk through. But to be honest, if 90% of your labor contractions are all being created artificially through an IV line of oxytocin, and that, you know, your body hasn't really done any of that, is a time that an epidural could be a good idea. Okay. If you've got nothing going on, there's all very, very little, actually not even very little, but if you've got absolutely nothing going on with contractions, you've had your gels, you've had the prostaglandin, I mean, you've had your waters ruptured, it's been a couple of hours to see if you establish into labor, nothing's happening, not at all, then if it was offered to you, or maybe you might want to suggest it, that if they're going to be turning their oxytocin up for whacking over the next hour or two to get you into labor, not a stupid idea to put an epidural on board in that occasion. The contractions are mean when they are fully oxytocin driven. Contractions naturally are pretty tough, but when they're fully oxytocin driven from an IV line, then they're pretty harsh. On top of that, you don't generally have the ability to have the mobility around the room that you would normally have. It's not so easy to do things like getting into a pool, getting under the shower, sitting on a spiss ball. Look, I know women who have done it, okay? It is not impossible. It's not. I have seen the most incredibly stoic, fiercely adamant woman get through an entire labor on an oxytocin drip, turned up to a good amount and done it naturally without pain relief and a bit of gas maybe, and using their own meditative labor because that's what they decided they were going to do. And I am in awe of them. And there's no reason that you couldn't do that as well. But what I'm saying is that this is a moment in time where, hand on my heart, I'll say it's not easy. So very personal decision. There's no right or wrong. What else do I want to tell you? Well, the only other thing is, in these last days, hours, week maybe, whatever you've got left, enjoy it, okay? Don't wish it away. Don't wish it away. And use every little minute of time to embrace and cherish, really cherish, that this is the last moments in time before you will become a mother, if this is your first baby, or while you can just enjoy your only child until you have a second, you know, really, really cherish this time because you're never going to get it back. And there will be moments in the future where you kind of wish you could step back in time just for a few hours. So just love it. and trust your baby that regardless of the medical obstetric situation going on with you, that ultimately the baby in conjunction with the universe, them being the universe, has already decided exactly when he or she will be arriving. And I've certainly over decades seen incredible amounts of coincidences, of synchronicities occur when those babies choose to be born. So just trust that your baby knows when he or she is meant to arrive. If you're into astronomy, just decide astrology, I should say. Well, astrology and astronomy used to be the same thing a few hundred years ago, not that long ago. So if you are into astrology, then just say, look, this baby knows exactly the place and time that he or she will be born, wishes to choose to be born under this incarnation. Or if you're religious, just say it's God's will. Just let it go. Let it go. Don't hear yourself talking, saying those things. Oh, I just can't wait for my baby to be here. And I'm so sick of this pregnancy. And I just need to know. I just need to know when I'm going to go into labor. This waiting is horrible. Try not to be saying all these things. Just go, I am adoring the last few days of having my baby inside my belly, because this is the last time it's going to be like this. And when my baby chooses to arrive, or when God chooses, or the universe chooses for the moment to be, I'll embrace that moment. And I am enjoying my crossword and my pleasant stroll along the beach, or stroll in a forest, or sitting on a swing in a swing set. All those things are going to be incredibly difficult and challenging to do in the next weeks and months and years to come. So just enjoy it and love it and embrace it. And because if there's one thing I can guarantee, you're going to be having a baby. It will happen. You're not going to be allowed to go on to 50 weeks of pregnancy. A quick PS with regards to the 40 to 43 weeks of gestation. That does become a bit of a grey area, to be honest. The evidence beyond 43 weeks is very strong that there is increased risk of unexplained stillbirths occurring. But between 42 and 43 weeks, it is a grey area. But because the biggest risk at that stage is unexplained stillbirth, of all the different risks that can occur obstetrically, if you haven't had preeclampsia by then, you're probably not going to get it. If you haven't had gestational diabetes by then, you're probably not going to get it. If your baby's still moving well, that's the question. That's the thing that can change. So if you are being strongly encouraged to not go beyond 42 weeks, I would have to say I don't know that that's bad advice. I certainly know of women who have been very happy to push the envelope and take it through to 43 weeks. And hey presto, at 42 weeks and 3 days, they're into labor and everything goes tickety-boo. But I also know of women who have taken it beyond 43 weeks, booked for an induction at 43 weeks, and which has taken a couple of days, and now they're at 43 weeks and 2 days, and they have had a stillbirth. So, you know, if only we could look in a crystal ball, and then we'd all know the perfect decisions to make, and we don't. So that's something that you need to listen to your maternal intuition and your health professional, your midwife and your obstetrician. I would say it's probably not a time to be pushing the envelope to radical limits, and you do have also increased risk at that stage of having a shoulder dystocia where you've just got a really big baby on board and the head gets born, but then its shoulders can get a little bit tight in your pelvic cavity. So that can end not well. So yeah, 42 to 43 weeks gray area, up to 42 weeks with a healthy pregnancy, healthy baby, a healthy mother, then up to 42 weeks is really universally regarded as absolutely normal. So hopefully that's all very clear for you guys, and I just wish you all the best and have a lovely week. And if you're watching this one, well, hopefully you can have your baby this week. Yay! Okay, bye everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. KathyFrey.com.